Now what's the word?
Democracy.
What's the word?
Democracy.
Yeah, what's the word?
Democracy.
Yeah, what's the word?
Democracy.
You need to know.
Democracy.
Make it grow.
Democracy.
The seed you sow, spread democracy. You need to know.
Democracy.
Make it grow.
Democracy.
Don't let it go. Democracy. Don't let it go.
Democracy.
We are your
election connection.
We are your
election connection.
Yeah, we are your election connection.
Welcome, everyone, to Election Connection with me, your host, Ruth Newman, here on All Volunteer Community Radio, WFMP 106.5 FM. So today we have a very important topic and a very special guest. We have with us Sumedha Rao, Executive Director of the Mayor's Office of Sustainability, who, according to what you said on that website, you are committed to catalyzing robust, inclusive, and collaborative solutions for a greener Louisville. So welcome, Sumedha.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Ever since Trump withdrew the United States from the Paris Climate Accord in 2017, there seems to be accelerating momentum among thousands of cities worldwide to combine forces, perhaps even bypassing nation states, in order to solve the crisis of global warming and climate disruption. We're getting nearer and nearer to that threshold of a temperature rise of 1.5 degrees Celsius, and we already have surpassed 1 degree, and that's 2 degrees Fahrenheit, mostly happening since 1975, according to the NASA website. I discovered that over half the world's population lives in cities. Nearly 200,000 more people are moving into cities every day. Cities consume over 3/4 of the world's energy, and they generate 80% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions. It so happens that city mayors and councils, and this is compared to state and federal politicians, tend to be the most trusted politicians because they operate at the ground level and are much more accessible to their constituents. City officials tend to be problem solvers. Cities do not tend to get embroiled in hostilities or wage war on each other, as do nation states. And according to research by Michelle Acuto of the University of London, there are over 200 global city networks that are working on climate change, health, and inequity. So, looks to me as if cities may hold the key if they can successfully cross-pollinate with each other and act as a unified front. So, Sumedha, what are your thoughts on our local government, Louisville's, capacity and willingness to collaborate with other cities, both domestic and international, and whether you think this offers hope for us really beating the clock on global warming? What do you think?
Well, that's a great question. And I think that we absolutely must collaborate as much as we can. You know, we already collaborate with our council, with our community, with our businesses, but we also collaborate a lot with our peer cities and other cities globally. And that's been an invaluable part of the work that we do because, you know, we don't need every city reinventing the wheel. So it really helps to learn about other cities' experiences, what went well, what didn't go well, and how people are approaching these problems. And, you know, we're part of international networks, national networks, regional networks, and there's something to be learned from every type of city, but especially with the regional networks, because we're all in very similar state and regional regulatory environments. We value those relationships a lot because we can really utilize what they've learned, some of their best practices, and implement them in our own city.
Yeah, and that's what I'm hoping we'll spend a good deal of our time talking about, is all of these networks. We just witnessed the end of the hottest year ever recorded. And back in 2020, the Louisville Metro Council passed a resolution calling for the city to use 100% clean energy by 2040. So do you think that we're on track to meet that goal?
Well, we're working very hard to be. So we're doing a lot of things to try to make sure that we honor those goals. A few years ago, you talked about urban heat. We also commissioned a study from the Georgia Institute of Technology to study urban heat. And they found at the time that Louisville was one of the fastest warming urban heat islands in the United States. And for those who are unfamiliar with what urban heat island means, it essentially means that urban areas that have lower tree canopy and more impervious surfaces and concrete and asphalt that hold a lot more heat tend to be, you know, significantly warmer than surrounding rural areas or areas that have more natural vegetation. And in Louisville, we're seeing that not only are we warming at a really alarming rate, but also that warming is inequitable in terms of its distribution across the city. And, you know, neighborhoods that are closer to industry and that have lower tree canopy that also tend to be historically redlined neighborhoods and neighborhoods that disproportionately impact communities of color and low-income communities, they tend to also have higher heat and vulnerability to these challenges. So it's important when we're talking about our 2040 clean energy goals to not only look at how the city is holistically getting to 100% clean energy, but also is prioritizing those communities that are already seeing greater impacts than others.
And so I take it that that is what Louisville is now involved in doing, is prioritizing and also engaging in programs to plant more trees. Is that right?
Yes. So we're the Office of Sustainability. We have focused a lot on clean energy in the past because that's a gap that needed to be filled. But we collaborate very closely with a lot of our peer agencies. For example, Parks Department does a lot of the tree planting work. So does an agency called Brightside. And, you know, we have all of our incredible nonprofits in the city and U of L and Trees Louisville and Louisville Grows and Olmsted. So there's a number of organizations that are very involved in increasing green space in the city, and we partner with them on a lot of these things. And they do try to prioritize those higher urban heat areas when they do their plantings. And on the energy side, we have programs, for example, like the Cool Roof Incentive Program, where you basically get $1 per square foot back in the form of a rebate if you install a lighter colored or more reflective roof, because ultimately, that makes your home more efficient, it reflects more heat, it keeps your neighborhood cooler, and it reduces your electricity bills. Uh-huh. So we dedicate over half of those funds every year to our highest heat districts to make sure that benefit is being distributed to the communities that need it the most.
What about making buildings more energy efficient? Have you done work with that?
So in terms of the building code, we have a state policy that doesn't allow us to exceed the state building code. And unfortunately, we're on a pretty old energy code at the state level. So we're on the 2009 energy code, and the city isn't allowed to exceed that code until the state is able to exceed it. So in lieu of, you know, regulation, what we are able to do is provide incentives to people. So we have a program called EPAD, or Energy Project Assessment District, which is just an innovative financing mechanism that provides, you know, favorable terms on loans that people can get to upgrade energy efficiency and clean energy on their buildings. So we've had over $15 million leveraged on various projects through that program. And similarly, we have a program called Solar Over Louisville, which offers discounted solar panels to residents to install on their homes. We connect you with a vetted installer so you can, you know, have the peace of mind that you're going with a credentialed company. And we've had about 150 participants over the last 2 years go solar through that program. So that's another way that we're, you know, offering incentives to help people make these changes without the regulatory support.
I see. I know we get hamstrung with state government so often. I've encountered that on my show a number of times. It's terribly unfortunate. I also, we're talking about making our city more resilient and healthy, but what about the other end of it, reducing the amount of pollution and reducing the fossil fuel emissions, for example, with coal-fired power plants? I know we stopped testing car emissions a number of years ago, so we're not doing that anymore. Are there any efforts to reduce the amount of carbon dioxide we're producing and other pollutants that are going into the air?
So that's a great question. A few years ago, we did a greenhouse gas inventory for the city that essentially tells you where the pollution is coming from. And it's really helpful to have this information because then you know how to target your solutions. And what we found in that study was that our largest emitting sectors were residential buildings, commercial buildings, industry and transportation. Those were kind of the largest slices of our emissions pie. And that has a lot to do with our fossil fuel-based electricity grid, the older building code that we talked about, and other things.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, I've had several of my guests on my show complain about how overbearing the state of Kentucky is with regard to its cities. For example, in Kentucky, the state preempts minimum wage. It preempts paid sick leave, gun control. The city's pension liability from unfunded retirement obligations that were established by the state. And one of my pet peeves, the authority of the city to enact legislation allowing for voluntary clean elections, something that several cities across the country have successfully enacted and thus removed special interest money from political campaigns. Louisville would have to first go to the state legislature to get permission. How paternalistic is that? And now we can add to this list the state stifling any attempts by the city to upgrade building codes and enacting laws that preserve and protect coal and other fossil fuel-based utilities that service the cities. All this is, in my opinion, detrimental to the future health and well-being of Louisville and other cities in Kentucky. Now, back to Sumedha Rao, Executive Director of the Mayor's Office of Sustainability.
It's ultimately, we're very coal dependent as a state in general, but also our region. So, you know, we don't have control over the building codes, we don't have control over the utilities, but we can do a lot in terms of meeting people where they are in their buildings and offering these programs and incentives. So, you know, we've done climate action planning in the past, and we recently undertook another effort and developed a regional priority climate action plan that is not just Louisville Metro Government, but also 10 surrounding counties in Kentucky and Indiana. This was funded by a grant from the EPA. And essentially, we came up with, you know, a few targeted solutions that we can utilize to advance energy efficiency and clean energy and lower bills and workforce development in these areas to kind of make some progress in the short term over the next 5 years. And anyone who's interested in seeing, you know, those plans or any of our past studies, you can go to louisvilleky.gov/sustainability, and that'll direct you to all of those studies and plans that I mentioned.
louisvilleky.gov/sustainability. Very good. Yeah. Be sure and check out that website, everybody. And you're listening to an interview with Sumedha Rao, Executive Director of the Mayor's Office of Sustainability, who, along with her team in the Mayor's Office, has been working and networking with other cities, local and regional authorities, businesses, and schools to create healthier, more environmentally sustainable neighborhoods in Louisville, especially those that are in the more impacted parts of our city. What about Rubber Town? Have you been able to do anything with Rubber Town, which is such a generator of chemical pollutants?
Yeah, absolutely. So our air pollution control district tends to be very engaged with the community and with the industries over there in terms of ensuring that industries are meeting regulatory requirements. And we also have a unique opportunity in Louisville because with a lot of community support and the work of the Air Pollution Control District, they passed the STARS program a few years ago. They created what's called the STARS program. And I think it stands for Strategic Toxic Air Reduction Program. And it's a really innovative program because it actually sets standards that kind of exceed some of the state and, you know, state standards and are targeted at pollutants that we had a lot of data on in terms of how they impacted these communities. So that program has been incredibly successful. I think that there were 70 to 80% of emissions reduced as a result of that program over the years. And that's a huge win that we should all be proud of. But, you know, that doesn't mean that there aren't any issues anymore. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And our air pollution control district continues to be involved in those. And we have a lot of community organizations that are really paying close attention to the science of the monitoring and advocating for good policies. So our office tries to support those efforts as we can.
I also wonder about encouraging electric cars. If your office or any part of Metro government has any initiatives for installing electric vehicle charging stations.
Yeah, so for our own internal municipal fleet of vehicles, mm-hmm. we have an executive order that was passed a couple of years ago that requires us to prioritize the purchasing of electric vehicles. So we're definitely doing our best with that, but there have been supply chain issues over the years that have prevented us from being able to purchase them as quickly as we wanted to. There've been a lot of delays in delivery. So we're definitely still, you know, kind of slowly chugging along in terms of transitioning our fleet and getting the infrastructure ready because of some of those challenges. But in the meantime, we know that there's been a lot of state level efforts around, you know, investments in like the battery plants, the Ford battery plants, as well as the statewide EV charging infrastructure network. So we're trying to coordinate with them and develop our own strategy for charging networks as well. So we have groups like Evolve Kentucky that have been great advocates for that and that have been getting a lot of these chargers involved. So we try to partner with them on these initiatives.
So these charging stations, if they ever got up and running, would be available to the public?
Yes, and there are several that have been installed in certain parks, facilities, and libraries and other public spaces, and we're trying to expand that. Uh-huh. Yeah, but on the flip side of that, you know, we are a very car dependent city.
Yes.
And we also need to, I think over 95% of our commutes in the city are car based. So while we do our EV transition, we also want to, you know, not lose sight of the fact that we need investments in public transport and in more bikeability and walkability and things, active transportation options for people.
Right. And I want to get into that. But before I do, there is just a question that I keep getting asked by different people, including me, which is, do we really, I mean, people are very cynical about whether or not we actually recycle. It's true that every 2 weeks they come around and pick up our recycle. They pick up things, you know, glass, cans, paper, mm-hmm. but what happens to the plastics and the metals and the glass and the paper? Where do they go? Do they actually get recycled?
Yes, absolutely. So I think that, you know, there is a misconception that things don't really get recycled and everything ends up in the landfill. But that really is not true anymore. And I would encourage folks to check out, for example, West Rock Recycling, which is one of our major recycling sorting facilities in the city. They do a lot of public tours. So you might be able to get in touch with them and go check it out for yourself. But You know, they do have improved technology these days that's able to handle more contamination in the waste stream, and they're able to sort things more effectively and recycle a lot of cardboard and glass and cans and bottles and things like that. I think glass is still more challenging, but at least with the cardboard and some of the plastics, I know that they have a more robust system in place now.
And what is this company? What is their name?
WestRock.
Spell that.
WESTROCK.
Okay, I haven't heard of them. The company is WestRock Recycling Solutions.
I would also encourage people to check out our Solid Waste Management Services department. They do great programs and education around recycling and best practices there, and they handle the recycling carts distribution. They also have these pop-up drop-off events, which are essentially, these one-time events that they do at different locations where you can bring your hard to recycle items like electronics and medication and appliances and things like that that you normally wouldn't know what to do with. They have these events year-round in different parts of the city where people can bring those things in and drop them off at that site, and they have professionals who can, sort them and deal with them responsibly.
And who are these people again, and how do we find out more about them?
So they are the Department of Solid Waste Management Services, and let me see if there's an easy link for you to get to them. But typically, if you go to louisvilleky.gov, that's our city website, and then you can see all city departments and then find some of the ones that I've been talking about.
Good. You can go to louisvilleky.gov and then type in Solid Waste Management Services into the search window that is up near the top. And you're listening to an interview with Sumedha Rao, Executive Director of the Mayor's Office of Sustainability, who, along with her team in the Mayor's Office, has been working and networking with other cities, local and regional authorities, businesses, and schools to create healthier, more environmentally sustainable neighborhoods in Louisville, especially those that are in the more impacted parts of our city. All right, now let's shift over to some of this networking that is just so inspiring to me and hopeful. Have we teamed up with other cities? And if so, who have we teamed up with and for what purpose?
Yes. So we have been fortunate to be, very connected to a lot of networks of cities that we have gained a lot from and we've been able to share our own successes with. So one of them is the Global Covenant of Mayors that we were a signatory of several years ago under Mayor Fisher. And that committed us to doing things like creating a greenhouse gas inventory, creating a climate action plan, creating a resilience and climate adaptation plan. And we have been able to do all of those things over the years. We've done a lot of research and community engagement and published these reports that have guided a lot of our efforts today. We are also a part of the Climate Mayors Network. So but Mayor Fisher and as well as Mayor Greenberg now serve on the steering committee of Climate Mayors. And that's a bipartisan network of nearly 500 US mayors that have come together to keep the local momentum going, regardless of kind of what happens at federal levels. So that's been another effective partnership for us to be part of. We're also a signatory of the UN's Race to Zero, the city's Race to Zero program, which is essentially cities committing to achieving net zero by whatever the science-based target is. For us, it is net zero by 2040. So that is something that has been established based on what the science says a city like us needs to do, and we are on the path to achieving that.
That's exciting.
Yes.
And as has already been stated, back in 2020, the Louisville Metro Council passed a resolution calling for the city to use 100% clean energy by 2040.
We're also part of the Resilient Cities Network. It used to be called the 100 Resilient Cities Program that was funded by the Rockefeller Institute. And we developed a resilience strategy as part of that, but we continue to be engaged with that network on more climate resilience focused work. We are also part of what's called the Urban Sustainability Directors Network. That's more North America focused. But again, it's offices like ours in various cities across the country. So the national network is incredibly helpful, especially, when there are federal grants or different opportunities. They really help cities navigate those policies and those and those grant opportunities. But we also have a regional version of that called the OKI Network, or the Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana Network. And we meet every other month. And, you know, all of our cities are in very similar state and weather and cultural environments. So it's really great to have a lot of peer cities that really relate to the kind of challenges and opportunities we have and to work with them. And then finally, we're also part of the LEED for Cities Network. So a couple of years ago, we were certified as a LEED Silver City. And that's a program of the U.S. Green Building Council. It's called the Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, or LEED. And, you know, because we were certified as a LEED Silver City, we receive a lot of information from that network, learn about what other LEED cities are doing, and share best practices that way. So
we
collaborate a lot.
Yes, indeed. And these organizations represent international. Now, I've got a figure here for the Global Covenant of Mayors. Mm-hmm. It has 13,239 cities as members around the world, and it represents 1.191 billion, with a B, billion people. And I'm so happy to see that Louisville is a member of that.
Yes.
It's the world's largest movement for local climate and energy actions, and its mission is to advance city-level transition to a low-emission and climate-resilient economy. Mm-hmm. And what they say, this is what I got off the internet, and they're called GCOM for short, or the Global Covenant of Mayors, that they could reduce global emissions by 5.6 gigatons of carbon dioxide equivalent. And a gigaton is a billion metric tons. And a metric ton equals 2,205 pounds, which is 10% heavier than a U.S. ton. 1 gigaton is equivalent to 10,000 fully loaded U.S. aircraft carriers, just so you know. And they're talking over 5 gigatons of carbon dioxide. That's their goal by 2050, which is a very large part of the gases that we are emitting. So that's fantastic. Yeah, so you're involved, it sounds to me, and I hope there's more than one of you, because it sounds massive.
Yes, absolutely. We have a team of five in our Office of Sustainability, but like I mentioned, you know, I mentioned the Air Pollution Control District, the Waste Management District, the Parks Department. So there are several other agencies. We also work very closely with our Fleet and Facilities Department. We have a couple of great energy managers that are working on reducing our own building emissions within Louisville Metro Government facilities and operations. So we work incredibly collaboratively across all of these, you know, agencies and other cities as well, because the scope of the work is so large that we really need to be leaning on each other to get it done.
Right. And you're listening to an interview with Sumedha Rao, Executive Director of the Mayor's Office of Sustainability, who, along with her team in the Mayor's Office, has been working and networking with other cities, local and regional authorities, businesses, and schools to create healthier, more environmentally sustainable neighborhoods in Louisville, especially those that are in the more impacted parts of our city. I am curious to know if you're familiar at all with Michael Bloomberg, who's the former mayor of New York City, all of his efforts, because I was reading that he has committed hundreds of millions of dollars to cities networking and coming up with solutions that they can exchange and share with each other.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So Bloomberg has excellent programs for cities. And we've been involved with a lot of different efforts. Most recently, we applied for an opportunity that unfortunately we did not win that grant, but instead they ended up connecting us with pro bono grant writers that have been helping us with some federal grants. So there's a lot of value that cities can get with being connected with Bloomberg and C40 and these other coalitions where we may not be formal partners, but we still gain a lot of value from the events and assistance that they provide cities.
Yeah, because the whole federal funding of all those infrastructure projects, have we been getting access to that federal funding?
Well, we've been writing a lot of applications and we're starting to see the results of some of them. So our Parks Department announced that they won, I think it was a $12 million grant last year to do a lot of tree planting and tree maintenance and create an updated tree plan. So that was a big investment in the city. We also recently had the EPA here to announce that they had made an award to our Air Pollution Control District and some partners, including the Alberta Jones Park. And there were a couple of projects that got funded that are going to help us kind of monitor and reduce air pollution. And we have applied for a $150 million grant to do solar on low-income homes in different parts of Kentucky. That's both urban and rural areas of Kentucky. And we were a lead applicant on that partnership. So we're still waiting to hear back from that. But there's a lot of exciting things in the works, and we'll have to see where we land. But we obviously want everything that we've applied for to be funded, but we'll have to see how it all plays out.
And if people want to become involved, is there a way that local residents can find out about what's going on and maybe even get involved?
Yes, absolutely. So again, louisvilleky.gov/sustainability is our website, and you can sign up for our newsletter on our website. We have a monthly newsletter that goes out, and we do a pretty good job of, you know, giving everybody a snapshot of all of the events and opportunities and public meetings and opportunities for public comment and volunteering opportunities, various things that folks can get involved in.
That's great. Now, I've got kind of a list of some projects that other cities are working on. And I'm just curious, because as you said earlier, we are a very car dependent city, which means that there are a lot of CO2 and exhaust emissions going up into the air. And one of my pet peeves, and I don't know how we can possibly solve this problem, is seeing these big semis just belching out black smoke from their exhaust. You know, when I'm a car behind a big semi and I see them belching out black, you know, exhaust fumes that go up into the air, my heart sinks. And I don't know if there are any efforts to control that, whether it can be done locally. I guess not, because they are interstate.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, there's not a ton that we can do at a local level to directly control that. But we have, as part of this Priority Climate Action Plan process that I was talking to you about, we convened a lot of folks in the logistics sector. You know, we're a UPS hub here, as well as a lot of our facilities managers and things like that, people that own a lot of the fleet traffic. And we also got, you know, received the help of the Environmental Defense Fund to do some research that showed that Louisville does have an above average increase in freight traffic, and the emissions from that, you know, the freight corridors tend to be located around a lot of vulnerable communities. And they had really compelling data about the number of children that are located along these corridors and that are more vulnerable to the air pollution. So there's a huge health impact too.
Yeah,
we know that our logistics companies are piloting a lot of, you know, electric vehicle and cleaner type of fleet in other states. And it's because there's a lot of state regulation that really incentivizes and helps that. And since we don't really have that yet in Kentucky, they're slower. So even though we are, you know, kind of the headquarters of some of these companies, we still have their oldest fleet because we don't have the policies that support the transition as quickly as other states do.
That's so unfortunate. It all
really
goes back to state government, and state government is too busy with LGBTQ and banning inclusivity and all these other kinds of things than to get into other more serious topics like citizen health.
Yeah, but we're trying. I mean, we're committed to doing something regardless. We don't want to lose hope. You know, we're committed to making it happen regardless of the barriers that we're going to face. So so we're certainly continuing to talk to our partners and seeing what options there may be. We know that our University of Louisville won a big federal grant to create a hydrogen hub. So there's all kinds of alternative fuel research that's happening, and there may be other opportunities for us to support. So we're definitely trying to stay on top of these developments and see what we can do.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I had a show a few weeks ago on the Louisville Airport with their new geothermal plant, which is really exciting.
Yes, they say
it might be the biggest geothermal plant in the world, they think, and for sure in the country.
Yeah. They're doing incredible work. They're also in the process of doing an airspace redesign that would both help with, you know, the noise of the air traffic coming in, as well as avoid a lot of emissions. So it's really exciting to see the impact of their work.
And that is an example, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, of a government-business partnership.
Absolutely.
And I'm wondering if there are any other examples like that of government partnering with business that you can think of.
Yes. Yes, definitely. So we, as part of this climate pollution reduction grant that we're applying for and the priority climate action plan that we just released, we talked to a lot of industry groups. We talked to some of the larger rubber town industrial companies. We talked to all of our major utilities, whether it's LG&E or the, you know, water company or the sewer district. And everyone has a lot of interest, and they have some projects in the works, and they're really interested in partnering with government to make these things happen. So hoping that we can build more clean energy, create more efficient wastewater facilities. There's just a lot of infrastructure opportunities out there that are in the works.
I would think so. And I had this idea, and I don't know if it's off the wall, but when local farmers produce food that ends up in our restaurants, it just seems to me that the food waste that comes from these restaurants really ought to go back to the farms and help fertilize the soil. And I would love to see some kind of a partnership there with the restaurants and the farmers.
Yes.
You know,
I think we did at one point have a curbside composting program for some businesses downtown. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think COVID and other factors ended up, you know, discontinuing that program. But we have talked about bringing that back. But, you know, until we're able to do something on a city scale, I would love to give a shout out to one of our local organizations called the Louisville Compost Co-op. I've been utilizing their services for a couple of years now, but especially for people that don't have their own yard where you can compost your own kitchen scraps, this is a great service where they bring you a bucket, essentially, that you can put your kitchen scraps in, and they swap it out once a week, and they're able to compost it and distribute that soil to farmers that need it. So
that's great.
And it's, yeah, it's $20 a month to do something that makes a big difference in terms of waste reduction.
And I have to say, self-servingly, that I do the same thing. I have a compost operation in my neighborhood, and I collect my neighbor's kitchen scraps and dump it into compost bins in my backyard.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
But I'm, you know, there are a number of cities already that have citywide kitchen scrap pickup along with yard waste. And by the way, we're going to have to come up with another name and not call it yard waste, because it's not waste. It's all valuable stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of folks call it black gold because it's, you know, the soil is rich with nutrients.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Yes. So is there any thought to having a citywide kitchen scrap pickup anytime in the future?
I mean, we've definitely talked about it, but I think, you know, one of our challenges is we have great ideas, but not always the capacity to do things. So, we're certainly interested in working on it. But
absolutely.
I think, that, you know, it helps, especially if, you know, people are listening to this and they think that's a great program. I would love to have that in my community. Talk to your council members, you know, call the city, make your voice heard. Because if people hear that there's a lot of community interest in something, it bumps it up on the priority list for us to work on.
And that's why I'm so pleased that we have community radio where we can talk about these things and get them out into the airwaves.
Exactly.
Speaking of which, I read that there is something called the Bankable Cities Initiative. I don't know if you've heard of that.
And I don't think I have.
What it is supposed to do is it connects cities to financial institutions and individual donors so that they can finance projects like this.
That's such a great initiative. I will definitely be sure to check that out. We're trying to do something similar within our community. So if you've seen our city's economic development plan, Growing Louisville Together, that was released a couple of months ago, as well as our housing strategy that the mayor unveiled last year, it's called My Louisville Home. Within both of those plans, we included sustainability language in those plans because ultimately we want to make sure that anything the city is doing has sustainability embedded as part of it. Right. And one of the big things that we advocated for was the inclusion of a green bank, which is essentially what you're describing, is an innovative financing agency that can leverage all of the financing tools that the city already has, as well as private and philanthropic funding, and really use it towards building greener infrastructure and greener processes in the city. So it sounds like, you know, we have some of this underway in the city, trying to figure out how we stand up this organization. And it sounds like through Bankable Cities, there's some external networks that we could get connected with as well. So
right. And you're listening to an interview with Sumedha Rao, Executive Director of the Mayor's Office of Sustainability, who, along with her team in the Mayor's Office, has been working and networking with other cities, local and regional authorities, businesses, and schools to create healthier, more environmentally sustainable neighborhoods in Louisville, especially those that are in the more impacted parts of our city. So I wanted to just mention, if I can find it in my notes, some of these other projects, you know, because after all, what we're talking about, you know, ultimately is our own personal health, how to make our bodies, our minds, and our spirits healthier, you know, both locally and on the planet. And I was reading about some other kinds of projects that I thought were really, really interesting. One of them is called Walking Caravans, and it's out of Bogota, Colombia. I don't know if you've heard of that one. Where have you?
I know that there's a lot of innovative things going on in Bogota. I haven't heard about this specific program.
I was really excited. What they do is they have a caravan of children, parents, and adult guides who all walk with the children to and from school.
And I love that.
And while they're walking, they're also teaching. They have various lessons that they're giving as they're walking, and things for the children to observe. So it's part of a movement to what they, I think they call it pedestrianize. Is that right? Pedestrianization. And along with that is something called 15-minute cities.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of that? Everything is within a 15-minute walk or bike ride, everything that you need, the grocery store, you know, your job, the post office, shops, things like that, parks.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that our city is not laid out for that.
No. So our Office of Planning has been doing some great work on taking a second look at our land development code and updating some sections that would allow our cities to be more, to have development patterns that facilitate more access to, you know, 15-minute walkable cities and things like that. And so is our Department of Public Works. They're building a lot of bike and pedestrian friendly infrastructure and trying to slow traffic and make our streets safer. So those things are definitely happening in the background, but I do think that, you know, the idea of a 15-minute city is something we aspire to and hope that we can do.
Yeah, I hope so too. I mean, there are some cities that are actually instituting low traffic neighborhoods that are bike and pedestrian friendly. And what they're doing is they're installing cameras to detect cars that are cutting through, using neighborhoods to cut through. and they're erecting barriers and putting up signage that says things like open to walkers, scooters, wheelchairs, and cyclists, so that only local people can drive their cars in. And it's much more walkable. And what they're discovering is that there are less accidents. There are less illnesses in these neighborhoods. And so I know that would be really hard to do here, but, you know, just making neighborhoods much more walkable, much more friendly. I know my neighborhood here is talking about planning some kind of party. And I've heard some people say, can we block off streets for a neighborhood party? Is that, do you know whether they do that here in Louisville, block off streets temporarily?
Yes, we've definitely had a few city events and, you know, community events where that's happened. I don't know if you all are familiar with the Cycluvia event that happens once or twice every year, but that's a public event where the Office of Planning, again, blocks off a street to traffic for a few hours. And it's, again, open to cyclists, skateboarders, skaters, walkers, you know, kids. And it's just a way to reimagine the street without traffic and see what that's like. So they have a few of those events every year, two or three of them, just for people to experience that. But I think that if somebody wanted to do an event like that in their neighborhoods, there's probably some city permits you may have to get for closing the streets down. But unfortunately, I'm not the expert on that. But I know that, you know, those types of events do happen and people really love them.
So that's a possibility. We could go to the city and find out what permit we need to get. We don't have a whole lot of time left, but I'm wondering, because now I'm saying this because years and years ago, back in the 80s, I worked for a university institute called the Natural Resources Research Institute in Duluth, Minnesota. And it was part of the University of Minnesota. And their mission, which was adopted by the state, so the state funded it, was to team up with local people. So this was part of the University of Minnesota, but it was a separate building in Duluth, Minnesota. And its mission was to team up with local people and work in partnership to create pilot studies. You know, if anyone came up with a real good idea that they really could latch on to, the university would help them along the way to develop it. You know, plans and pilot experiments and trials and lots of experts to help them along. And in that way, they created a lot of green businesses that became very successful. One of them, as a matter of fact, that I'm very proud of, I hope it's still in business, called Van Technologies. They're all PhD chemists, and their whole mission is to come up with alternatives to toxic chemicals for various chemical companies. So that's what they do. And they were given their start by the Natural Resources Research Institute. So I'm wondering, does Louisville partner at all with academia?
Yeah, we do. I mean, we talk to U of L a lot. They have a pretty strong sustainability program, and they have the Environment Institute that's doing a lot of innovative work. So we definitely stay in touch with them. We partner with them on different projects. I know we've started to talk to Simmons about some of the plans that they have. They're working on creating environmental justice curricula. So we're, you know, we're interested in supporting that effort. So we're definitely in touch with our local institutions, but I don't know that we have something quite like what you described. So that would definitely be something to talk to them about and see if someone's interested in setting something like that up.
Yes. And if you wanted to, I could always put you in touch, although the director who was there at the time I was there is no longer there. But I have all the contact information. I could put you in touch with them because they've been around now since 1984. Okay. And they've been doing incredible, incredible work. They've created thousands of jobs in Northern Minnesota that are green. They're all green jobs. So,
That's great.
That's one thing that we really need to worry about now is our economy and hooking our economy up to environmental justice and improving the environment. So is there anything else that you would like to mention?
Well, I think, you know, this has been a great opportunity to chat. So thank you for giving me that opportunity. And I would just encourage everyone to go to louisvilleky.gov/sustainability and sign up for our newsletter. And you can also follow us on social media. We're at Sustain Lou or at Sustain Louisville on most social media platforms. And, you know, we're constantly sharing information on surveys and meetings and events and volunteer opportunities. And it's just a great way for people to get plugged in and to join the conversation.
Yes. And now that the weather hopefully is going to get warmer, yeah. I'm sure there are going to be plenty of opportunities for making this a much healthier, more beautiful, more resilient city. And you're listening to an interview with Sumedha Rao, Executive Director of the Mayor's Office of Sustainability, who, along with her team in the Mayor's Office, has been working and networking with other cities, local and regional authorities, businesses, and schools to create healthier, more environmentally sustainable neighborhoods in Louisville, especially those that are in the more impacted parts of our city. Let me ask you this, and this is kind of out of the blue, and maybe you don't know anything about this, but I did find out that Mayor Greenberg discontinued the Louisville Metro Office of Globalization. Have you heard of that office?
Well, there's been a lot of restructuring, so it hasn't been discontinued. There used to be an Office of Globalization within Economic Development, but that is now elevated to the mayor's office and is now called the Office of Immigrant Affairs, and it's within the Office of Equity. So it still exists. It's just been elevated, name change. Yeah.
And then I also noted that Louisville has an Office of Resilience and Community Services. Mm-hmm. Do you explain what that is?
Sure. Yeah. So the Office of Resilience and Community Service does a lot of services for our vulnerable populations, like our houseless populations and low-income homeowners and communities. So it's more social resilience than, I guess, climate resilience, if you can think about it that way. But that's kind of what their focus area is.
Another thing that just popped into my head, you know, when we have big, huge events like Thunder Over Louisville, which is coming right up, I never see, I used to live right on the river at the Harbors, which was in Jeffersonville. And so that was like ground zero. And I would see thousands of people, you know, along the riverfront, but I never saw any clusters of containers for recycling. And I was just at a research station just a couple of weeks ago. And that research station, I was really impressed because everywhere you went, whether it was the cafeteria or the dorms, they would have clusters of containers that were all labeled. So one of them was you know, food, one of them was plastics, and I forget how they labeled it. They didn't label it landfill, the ones where you could, you know, you couldn't recycle at all. They labeled it something else. I just wonder, at these big events that Louisville has, are they doing that now? Are they putting these containers out there in clusters so that people can have that option to throw things into the right container?
That's a great question. I don't know that we have like a standardized policy around all the big events that happen in the city, but I will make sure to take that back to our solid waste management services department and see if we can get something together that would serve that purpose. But that's a really great idea. And I agree, it's an important need. I'm always at these community events too and kind of wondering where to put stuff. So
Well, thank you so much for being on my show, Sumedha. And I hope you'll be on future shows. And I invite you and your team and anyone else from the mayor's office to come to our 7th annual birthday party. We've been on the air 24/7 now for 7 years. Well, it will be 7 years on April 9th. Our party is on April the 13th, Saturday, from 5 p.m. until 8 p.m. or a little after 8. And it's going to be at the Logan Street Market, which is 1001 Logan Street, I believe, and it's 40204 in Louisville. So we're going to have Charles Booker. We're going to have other guests. We're actually going to have our sister city, and they don't call it sister city. They call it Twin City because they consider it to be sexist to call it sister city. So it's our twin city in the United Kingdom, in England, and it's called the East Leeds Community Radio Station. They're hopefully going to be there virtually.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we're having
That's
a
great.
Big party with music. We're going to live broadcast. We'll have speakers, a big birthday cake, lots of food vendors, so and various nonprofits will be there tabling. So we invite everybody, okay. including you. So thank you very
thank you.
Much. I really, really got a lot out of this conversation. And I'm glad that you're in the office that you're in and doing the things that you're doing. So yeah. I want to thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate this opportunity.
That was Sumedha Rao, Executive Director of the Mayor's Office of Sustainability, cluing us in on some of the environmental sustainability and CO2 reduction projects her office has taken on. She also filled us in on Louisville's collaborations with other cities, both domestic and international, other regional authorities, businesses, and schools, to come up with best practices for achieving the Metro Council's 2020 resolution to use 100% clean energy by 2040. Sumedha Rao also will be part of a panel that is discussing the interaction of fair housing and environmental justice at the Louisville League of Women Voters Democracy in Action Forum that takes place Monday, April the 15th, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Lang House, 115, that's 115 South Ewing Avenue. And speaking of voting, Kentucky's primary election is Tuesday, May the 21st. The voter registration deadline for that election is Monday, April 22nd. For more details, go to elect.ky.gov or vote411.org. Well, that's it for this week's Election Connection. This is Ruth Newman. Thank you for listening.